Hey there, everybody. It's Forrest Arnold with Windermere here in Poulsbo. And I've got a couple of thoughts that really celebrate the July 27th mid-year party we had at Joni Kimmel's home yesterday. Today's the 28th. And I'm telling you something, it was really cool. It isn't Christmas. It isn't the end of the year. It is mid-year. And to have a celebration with 35 or just fabulous people with Windermere Poulsbo. What a great celebration of the success and the vibe of this company. And so, Carter and Tori, I wanted to speak right to you and say thank you for the vibe you help us have there. To Julie, who is a star, wonderful broker and helping me really up my game as a broker here in Washington. And you know, the cool thing there is people keep asking me, Forrest, why did you move from Hawaii? You were there for 30 years, man. Why would you move to Poulsbo? And I hear this question every single week. So here's what I say. I have a wonderful client in Hawaii named Rick Evans. And I would call him on the phone and I'd say, Rick, what is this? It says Poulsbo. What's Poulsbo? He says, son, don't let those guys in Seattle get you. Kitsap County, they've really got it together. Check out Poulsbo. He has a place out somewhere out in Indianola there on the water. So I had dreams. And I think part of what my history has been is I had some dreams that I had and that have shifted over the years. And so have you, I'm sure. Okay. People keep asking me, I had some dreams of living past my combat service in Vietnam. And, you know, I was an ambitious young guy, patriotic. I thought it was the right thing to do, to be a change agent. Well, you know, I was a psych major in school. I had been counseling and sort of coaching my mom since I was 13 about her private life, her intimate life, frankly. And, you know, being a change agent to improve people's lives, that's what counted to me. So I had kind of an ambitious patriotic self that in 1971, while I was still in high school, I joined the Naval Reserve and took some training. I had exceptional scores. I had really, really high scores and a plan. I had a dream of going to the Naval Academy and becoming a career officer in the Navy. And I thought that was a patriotic and a right thing to do. You know, as time went by, I think I was both patriotic and naive. Because once I got to the ship, and the truth is, when we went active, my older brother went to a supply ship, and I think he went to some Rose Festival, maybe in Portland somewhere. I was assigned right to a combat ship, and I was involved in missile radar. You'll see this symbol on my shirt. I retain this now. This is a rangefinder. And the rangefinder function of being aboard a ship with missile radar, it says if enemy planes are coming after our ship, we have the ability to track that and, frankly, send big missiles, the Tartar missile system, to fly weapons up there to take care of the bad guys. Well, okay, so that's what happened. 1972, they called us aboard the dock in San Diego, and they said, we're not telling you where we're going, but we're going to go. Let your families know. And I jumped off the ship and went to the phone booth. They had phone booths in those days. I called my mom and reached her. And as I'm telling her the story, I burst into tears. And I said, Mom, my entire life that I've planned, my whole ambitious, positive life of college and success, I'm so afraid of being killed and having all of that stop. Well, she was wonderful, and she had compassion for my fear. She had her own fear. And what do we do when things change like this and we've signed up for a responsibility that might be patriotic, might be naive, and I got aboard the ship and I joined the missile radar group. I remember going aboard and going into that part of the ship and saying, "Guys, okay, here I am. I'm ambitious. I'm patriotic. I was going to go to the Naval Academy, but now I'm here." And I remember them looking at me and going, "Kid, you are so naive. You don't know what we've all been through." They had been on several visits to Vietnam, of course. And they knew something cynical and dark, and they wanted to stamp out my enthusiastic, naive self. And, you know, okay, I sort of follow. Why would they do that? So my ship left in May. We went into combat duty there in Vietnam, all along the coast, a lot in North Vietnam, 103 combat missions, and the folks from the shore were shooting back. Believe me, I had one night, I'm out on the deck looking at the stars and it's 2:30 in the morning. And all of a sudden, boom, right by us, our ship had been showing a light of some kind. And the North Vietnamese people were shooting bombs over our head. I remember feeling it go through the air and land in the water right next to me. And I got up and I kind of, in the dark, went to the door and tried to get back inside to a place of safety. And you know what? It felt like being in a war aboard the ship, because men were so stressed. They were so tangled. They were so unhappy. The war was cynical. I remember I've got some pictures of me carrying these 80-pound projectiles, which are high-explosive 5-inch rounds, and we shot 26,000 of them in 103 combat missions, and I don't know how many people we terrorized, how many villages we destroyed, how many little lives we disrupted. I don't know. So as I look back on that now, as a man of 70, that's 50-some years ago now, I look with some regret and some reflection, and I say, what did we do? What did we do? Why? Why did we do it? And, of course, coming back from the war, we were baby killers and, you know, all that stuff. But you know what? My life chapter, everything had changed. The love of my life, Patty, she had moved on. She had a dream of being with a doctor, and she went off and did that. So I moved from LA. I had hit the floor. I mean, when she bailed, I was so depressed. I mean, I know why. I got a glimpse of why people kill themselves. That's not me. I wasn't going to do it. But boy, could I see how people would. And just to move things quickly along, you know, I had to endure that until I started going back to college at West LA Municipal College, which was nearby. And I even got an A in algebra, which I'd studied back in school and had trouble with. I couldn't follow that other teacher, but Mr. Kubo, Japanese man, he got algebra to come across to me, and I got an A in the course. Well, that's a big move. Anyway, I did that for a while, and then I moved from Los Angeles up to Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa is where the college was, Sonoma State University, and I played for the soccer team. I was the goalie and had some great, great times there. I was a psych major and business major, and I remember the human psychology movement there was very much about deep change, deep reflection, those kinds of things. And along the way, I got certified as a trainer in neuro-linguistic programming. Neuro-linguistic programming, what is that? You know what? What it is the study of how the mind forms ideas, how we create change on a deep level, how we overcome phobia, how we, you know, reflect on our lives and move ahead, move ahead from there in a way of therapeutic change. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a therapist, but boy, I'm a change agent. And I've done that for all the years since. So here I am coming along in life. And yeah, I was learning a lot. Well, in August of 1976, I get a call from my sister-in-law, and she says, "Sit down. I've got some news. Dad has crashed his plane." He was flying his new plane with his beautiful girlfriend, Grace. They'd flown across the country to Iowa and saw his old friend. And as they came back through Colorado, there's a place called Monarch Pass. And according to the numbers of his plane, my dad looked at that and he said, "Hey, my plane should be able to fly over the top of Monarch Pass." Well, witnesses said, "This guy's in trouble." They see the plane. They say, "He's not climbing in a way that's going to get him over the pass." 10 o'clock in the morning, beautiful day. Finally, Dad decides he's got to turn the plane and go back. As he turned the plane, he dropped in elevation and went through trees. He actually went through some vertical trees. Finally, the right wing hit the ground, smashed straight in. He goes ejecting out the door 100 feet away, rocking, going through rocks. Poor Grace in the plane. She's hanging out. And as people came to visit the crash site, they see her dead hanging out the door. He's down the hill, probably should have just finished things there, but he's 48 years old. 48. How old are you right now? I'm 70 now. So here's Dad at age 48, crashes his beautiful new plane. Grace is gone. And I fly out to Denver, where he is. He never spoke another word. He never was able to do anything except be there. And he died about 13 months later. He lived. We thought he'd get coming back. We hoped he could come back. He didn't. Okay. So in 1976, so my older brother and I took over the company. My brother was president and I was marketing guy. My brother didn't want to really be there. And after a while, he left and he literally said, "Listen, I've got to move on." I became president and CEO of Arnold Magnetics Corporation. Arnold Magnetics, you can look it up. I was CEO there for 15 years of a tech company that had 120 employees. I think at the peak, we had 120 people. And some of these folks were with us for 30 years. One of the originals is a woman named Ricky Stevens. And Ricky Stevens was so dedicated to my dad. She was there for 30 some years. Al Gayton, this guy, he went on the beaches of the Second World War, and he came and helped that company run. And he would walk up and down the manufacturing aisles and meet everybody, and they would see him fair and dedicated. He loved my dad. And when Dad crashed and died, Al came back out of retirement to help run the company for me and for my brother. These are people, Alice Nako. She's a Japanese woman. She was with us for 25 years. Susie and some other of the just fabulous people. Odie Bell Jackson. She came out from LA to live and to work, keep working with us out in Camarillo. So I moved the company and built a building out about an hour north of LA. And many of our employees stayed with us. How they did that, I don't know. That's a big commute, but it was inspiring to me. Along comes 1989, and I had started to have a dream, another dream of living in Hawaii. And part of my old notebooks in college I could show you is me living in a geodesic dome on some land looking across water at another island. And here it is. In 1988 or so, I had built a house in Kohala Ranch, big, giant house, don't ask me what I was doing. 5,400 square foot house, big four car garage. I had the money. I did it out of cash. Don't ask me what I was thinking, but it was a certain kind of dream, a circular pool, the whole thing. Anyway, each of these stories tell the story of changing dreams. And have you had dreams that you've let go, that you had to revise for the reality of the situation? Of course. And so did I. So along the way, I had started a training company while I was living in Hawaii, there in Kohala Ranch. You could look it up. A place called Advanced Learning Systems. And we ran some neuro-linguistic programming training and certified some people in NLP. You know, to me as a teacher was a great path. And it was a real compassionate way for me to share what I had learned in leadership and in NLP. It was really, really something. And of course, I'd had my own high and low times. I'd had a drug period. I mean, everybody tries what they're doing. And it was a time of chaos. And in some ways, there was chaos. In some ways, it was fabulous. But finally, I sold the house in Kohala Ranch, lost some money because I put so much cash into the place. So anyway, reflection, another dream, buy some land in North Kohala. Imagine the big island of Hawaii, way up here at the top is Kohala. Actually, the island is shaped kind of like this. And right over here is the island of Maui. So I had 21 acres right here looking across the ocean at Maui. It was fabulous. And in that way, my dream had shifted. It had come to pass. Here I was on the land. I built the house. I put the shingles on the roof. I put in the water system. We had catchment water from the rain. Eventually, we got county water and had a good supply of that. But I had leak after leak after leak, and I was the handyman. Well, also, there's wild pigs all around. They're trying to get in and drink our water and chase our dogs and all that stuff. One of them even chased Sandra up onto the stairs. And I finally said, enough already. And I brought out my old rifle and I shot this pig to stop the danger. And my neighbor, Ralph, came up at 11:30 at night with his tractor and skinned this big old pig, threw 40, 50 pounds of pig guts down the mountain off the cliff to the sharks below. And the truth is, my dogs and us, we didn't like the taste of the meat. It was horrible. It was real gamey. So here I am living out on the country. We had these beautiful gardens. We had just grew beets and arugula and peppers and had a fantastic garden. So I tell you all that because each time these dreams would show up, it moved me in a certain deep way. And I would say this, after a while, I started to realize how often had I gone up that dirt road, that gravel road, up to town and out and to show real estate and so forth. I spent an enormous amount of time commuting from that country place. And eventually, Sandra was saying to me, hey, man, and I finally met Sandra in 2002 in the Aikido training dojo. We met through martial arts and spent 17 years studying Aikido. We're taking a break right now, but she became fourth level black belt. And she was the manager and the boss of the dojo, chief instructor. And I was there as what they call Nidan. I was a second level black belt. And it had a huge impact on me because I'd come from a boxing family and I'd studied Shotokan karate, which, what's the assumption when you're a boxer or in karate? What's the assumption? You go into the ring and the agreement is you're there to dominate and destroy the other person. You are there. The agreement goes unconsciously scripted, but it says, I'm here to dominate you and dominate you, win over you, knock you out. That always bugged me. And it wasn't really me, wasn't really my style. So to walk in there and see this beautiful woman, Christina Varjan, who was the instructor, and she's a world class, she's like one of the top non-Japanese Aikido teachers in the world. And she lives nearby. And her husband, Rico Varjan, was my counselor, my mentor, and helped me look at what I was doing with my life and with drugs and with all that stuff, and help me get into Aikido. Well, I'm there in the dojo. I'd been out in town and I witnessed the walk in and walk out of a beautiful young woman. And I didn't know who she was. Well, it was Sandra. I saw her in town. Okay. And then a few months later, guess who walks into the dojo? Sandra. And she says, I want to study Aikido. And I said, well, I am your ambassador. I am your red carpet ambassador, dear. Come on in. So we began, and you know, she'd been seeing someone else. She said no to me for going out for a while. Finally, I met her up at the transfer station. And I said, you know, those trash bins, if you were my wife, you would never have to, you know, throw away trash. And she says, really? Oh, really? I said, you have to go out with me. Come on. She says, okay, how about today? We went and had lunch down in town, cute little cafe. And we've been together 20 years now. Is that a good adventure? Is that an incredible vision? It is. It is. It is. And every time each of us has a dream, can it shift? Can we accept it if it shifts? Can we tolerate the unknown of a shift in a basic, deep dream? I'm going to say yes, because to me, I've had to keep doing that. I did it after combat in Vietnam. I did it after being the CEO of the company about lawsuits where I lost a ton of money. I'll tell you a story sometime about being involved in a deal where they targeted me personally, not me and my partners, but me personally, and were telling every lie they could to steal my home, to take everything I had. It cost me $310,000 in legal fees. My entire life retirement money was taken by that lawsuit. And you want to see somebody get cynical? Me. And did I get depressed? And I look up to heaven and said, God, don't you realize I'm a nice guy? What is this? Are you off the job or what? It cost me $310,000, all of my retirement, and probably 2 or 3 years of complete grief, fear. It cost me my marriage with Elena. It cost me my marriage. It was chaos. So now, as a real estate counselor and as a broker, I can tell you and every other client, believe me, don't go off on this idea that we're going to just sue the other guys and get our attorney's fees. It just does not work that easily. So anyway, what I'm sharing with you are some of the bumps along the road that I've had, that you have had. I'm sure you've been beat up against the guardrails a few times too. And in that way, how can we keep our star bright? How do we turn and say, here's what my legacy will be. Here's how I stand up in the world. Here's how I show up. Here's how I'm kind to people. How do we do that? Well, I've got a new nonprofit that I've created called menthrivepast50.org, menthrivepast50.org. And what is that? I mean, it is for men, because often, even if they have plenty of money, plenty of influence, they've run companies, they've run organizations like I have, we have a discussion, no money involved. And we have a deeper discussion about what are their dreams? Who are they now? What is the chapter of their life that has changed? And I can now take, frankly, since I've had this cancer, and frankly, the Veterans Administration says, listen, now we understand your case. And they've been able to make me 100% disabled. I don't feel disabled, but the category is called disability, and I'm able to turn down the jets. I have been in a rush. Let me tell you this. I've been in a rush, a hurried, fearful rush for 70 years to prove myself. 70 years of proving myself to dad, to teachers, to the world, to you, to girls, to, I mean, what a life. So now I'm able to turn down those dials. And that's what this nonprofit is. As the founder of it, I meet with men, particularly on Bainbridge Island, because there's a lot of men that are there, but Kitsap County as well. And we have an ongoing dialogue, mostly delivered via Zoom, some in person. But what we do is help explore a couple things. It's what I call the ageless path. We're all going to get older, but let's age less along the way. So here's the model. Every Monday, we focus on vitality. How do I build my vitality? Every Tuesday, we focus on, hey, what about my life purpose? Am I doing work that matters in the world now? And I might make a shift. Wednesday, smart money. How do I make sure my money lasts as long as I'm going to live? A lot of Americans, they don't have enough money to hold them well through the longevity that they really do have. That's Wednesdays. We focus on smart money and safety. Frankly, safety. If I'm feeling safe about money, I'm able to cool my jets a bit, okay? Thursdays, caring connections. So many men, and men and women maybe, withdraw from friendships, withdraw from family, withdraw from the world as they get tired. They lose their caring connections and they feel isolated. And I'm telling you, have you known men and women who have had great life experience, may have money, may have all the right tools, maybe, but feel isolated? They feel alone. They feel alone. That's what our circle does, is give them lifelong friends. I have a weekly call I do with three of my best buddies. One is in Canada part-time, one's in LA, one is in Tacoma. And our friendship network, it's called Men of Crystal Heart. I call them Men of Crystal Heart, and we talk every week about who we are and what we're doing. What we're doing in ourselves and what we're doing in the world. And how do we direct and express kindness and values that are up here in our country? Hasn't there been a decline or a sort of agreement that says being mean to people is kind of okay because we see visible people who do that? Wrong. Not cool. Not cool. Let me tell you a quick story. I have a wonderful, lovable mentor friend who's 82. His name is Doug. And he has a real soul pull to help our country heal and to have people value the liberties and the incredible roots of this company, of this country, pardon me. And what he does, he calls his project Americans Stepping Up. Americans Stepping Up. And I say, Doug, let's get you a podcast. I've got a podcast. I've got 200 videos of people talking about thrivepast50.org. And he goes, you know, wait a minute, man. Wait. Forrest, slow down. Couple things, man. I have never written a book. I've never written a book. I've never been out there as a big major speaker. You know what? He says, does the world really need one more smart guy telling his story? And I go, whoops, there's a flag on the play. Okay, well, I'm going to throw up a flag. The answer is, of course we do. Of course we do. He says, I've never written a book. I've never been a national speaker. Who's going to listen to me? And I go, yep, there's a flag on the play. What do I mean? I say, Doug, look at the rules that you're attending there. Look at the life rules that you're listening to. It's something like if I don't know everything and have it really perfectly figured, worked out, and I'm a national speaker and I've written a book, I can't say a word? No. There's another rule. I've got it on my window over here. It says, the true creator takes these steps even when they're not sure they believe in themselves. The true creator takes these steps even when they're not sure they believe in themselves. Okay. So I'm encouraging him to rewrite his rule book that he lives by. What's the rules that you and I have that may hold us back? Think about that for a second. If I have a rule that says I'm not smart enough, fast enough, quick enough, don't have enough money, lovable enough, I'm not in the right process, I'm not in the right organization, I'm limited, I don't have everything figured out. Is that bad? Or is that just the truth of the matter? We all are working on our material. We're all working on our screenplay, as I say. So anyway, this is a long talk, but I want to come back around to the Windermere party, because look at the images of this home. Look at the images of these friends that work together in a most high integrity, important task called helping people find homes they love. People finding homes they love and that love them enough to keep them happy, lit up, motivated, healthier, that the money thing makes sense, the financially solid, that they have caring connections around, they've got doctors around, they live somewhere that's good for them. And you know what? When people feel pulse vote, they're not worried about the countertops in the house. They're worried more about, they want to learn more about the town they live in, the community they're part of. And that's what Windermere does. And you know what? I'm really good at this, helping people find homes they love and that love them enough for them to live longer. I call it longevity real estate. Longevity real estate. How about if each of us has a home and a situation in a community that's enlivening to us, that is warm, that is friendly, and that celebrates who we are and who we are in our community, and honors who we are in our strength. Okay, it's not a put down community; it's a celebration community, and it's people who care, and they have got sweet kids, and everybody's learning together, and the level of conversation keeps rising. It keeps rising. Is that a worthy cause? Yes, it is. That's part of my cause in the work with Windermere. So let's take a look. You know, this event, mid-year, not at Christmas. This is a mid-year celebration of the office and the vibe of Windermere West Sound Realty, okay? Which we've got great offices on Bainbridge Island, in Poulsbo, which is where I office, out in Kingston, fabulous. There's 19 cool agents out there in Kingston. I didn't realize how many folks are with the Windermere office in Kingston. There's one in Silverdale. So you think about these places, Silverdale, Poulsbo, Bainbridge, and Kingston. Is this a cool area? Yes, it really is. And we're at Joni's home. She and her husband have this beautiful place down on Limolo, which is kind of the Beverly Hills Strip of this area. An oceanfront place. Where do you see these pictures? They're so beautiful. And frankly, the vibe of the team, the people are high integrity. They're sweet people. They care for each other. They're open. There are no secrets. Everybody is celebrating the victory and the joy of working together in Windermere. How about that? There's 40 agents in the Poulsbo office. And each Monday, we have a meeting at 9:30 where we see each other and we hear about new opportunities and we share our greatest and latest listings. I've got a listing right now in a place called Viking Park. And for $177,900, just under $178,000, is this incredibly nice home. And frankly, you know, there's a monthly fee for having this home, but you're on leased land. And I'm telling you, what a place. And could mom and dad move in there, be happy, and have a single level home? They could, frankly, if there's limited mobility or any of that, the house is perfect for that. And the current owners even cried as we listed their property because they're moving away from dear friends there in Viking Park. They're moving down the road a couple miles to a place called Cedar Glen. Why? Because they can buy more affordably there. They're going to buy a place for $97,000. And, you know, sometimes the finances just make life easier and more peace of mind for dear folks like Mary and Kevin. Okay. That's my job, is to help people's lives get better every day. Do I do a good job of that? Yeah, most of the time. I do. I really do. And let's take a look now. Here is the home of Joni and her husband. They served this incredible meal and party, 35 folks from Windermere. And look at the setting. Look at the people. Look at the smiles. The vibe is good. It's real. It's authentic. It's fair-minded. It's fair play required. And the setting for this, people keep saying, why'd you move from Hawaii? Because I realized it took me 2 years to sell the property because I really had that dream. I finally realized I need to make a change. And the fact that I moved over here to the Seattle area, I got connected with Fred Hutch Cancer Treatment, and it has saved me. The boss of Fred Hutch says to me, Forrest, from head to toe, young man, from head to toe, you are now cancer-free. And that's over a 5-6 month period. The immune therapy that they shared with me got inside of me and activated my own immune system to combat the cancer that, I mean, I had tumors in my head. I had tumors in my lungs, all gone. You are cancer-free. Really? Yeah, it's like I could hardly believe it, but I do believe it. And I've got such good people. And of course, I've got to still be smart and careful to watch for melanoma, which looks like it might have come from my 7 months of combat duty in Vietnam, where all sailors and soldiers were exposed to Agent Orange, dioxin, which is a known, of course, poison, and carcinogen. Finally, I got the right terms straight, and the Veterans Administration saw I had lung cancer. So they said yes, finally. They had rejected my request. I've had asthma since the war for 50 years. 50 years. Oh, my God. I've had skin cancer. I've had soft cell cancer. They said no to all of that because those weren't on their list. Finally, lung cancer got the attention it deserved because it was on their list. And they said, okay, you're at 100%. And all of a sudden, my dials get to be settled. I get to sit by the water and look at the ripples on the water and not be in a rush. I don't have to rush. And look at these fine people I work with. And look at this kind of a setting where we work. Look at this life that we get to create together through our good intention and holding our spirits high, our integrity at the top, and do a professional job that really cares for people. And, you know, when I say menthrivepast50.org, again, these are people that have real money. They've got influence. They've done very well in life. That's fine. But they are clients and they are buddies and friends in the circle because most of us were underfathered. We didn't have a deep relationship with a mature and balanced man as we grew up. Most have not. And so how do I have the tools to move ahead through things like aging, money changes, politics, technology change, all the changes that are happening around the world? How do I cope? Well, let's learn that together. And I've spoken a little earlier about the weekly and daily focus on some different important vital function of our life. Absolutely. Vitality on Mondays. Tuesday is life purpose. Am I doing work that matters? Wednesday, smart money. Let's make sure that works. Safety becomes part of that. Thursdays is about caring connections. Let's develop our friendships and our deeper caring connections. Friday, creative life. You see my instruments back here and my poetry writing. Part of all that is my creative life in expression. And I want to share the results of all that with you. And I'd love to hear your version of all that, the songs you write and the paintings you paint and the books and the things, the articles that you have created in your creative self. I want to share those and see those. And we share them through the project. We share them through the project. Men Thrive Past 50.org. And if you'd like to support an organization like ours, of course, we invite that. To me, we are able to deliver from our home and from our offices here in Poulsbo, we're able to deliver world-class service and support all across the world. And so we're inviting people who get this, who understand this. Some people go, listen, man, I'm a man. I'm okay. I don't need that kind of stuff. If anybody needs that kind of stuff, they're weak or they haven't developed yet or what. Okay, that's fine. Talk to you later. Maybe never. But there are some people who do understand that men suffer through these channels, suffer through aging. They suffer through money changes. They suffer through loss of loved ones. They suffer through confusion about technology. I have suffered on all of those fronts. I've suffered through the lawsuits, through the joys and the losses. Maybe I've told you, I had a dream of selling a hotel in Hawaii, and we did. We sold this little regional hotel that had been there 150 years, and we sold it to a health clinic that wanted to convert it to be the local healthcare clinic. I had a dream of selling a big green project, and I created a place called Pu'ako Green down near the coast. If you know the Big Island, the Mauna Lani Resort is nearby. And 800 acres is the listing that I got. And the fella said to me, Forrest, okay, listen, man, I need to make a change. What's the real price? If I need to sell this right now, what's the price of these 810 acres? I said, the truth is, I think we have to get below $7 million. He ends up having $21 million in the property. Oh, my God. Including archaeological research, all the reports that you need to develop this 5-acre set of 160 home sites that are roughly 5 acres apiece. And if you're going to do this, you have to have all these reports. Well, he ends up selling it for $6 million. He lost $14 million. And he said, I'm moving on. And he had the character and the balls to move on. I remember talking to him on the phone and said, listen, I think what we're seeing is a fabulous future for this project. But right now, it's a tough one. And, all of the roads and infrastructure and water and all the things that would go in were going to be an incredibly expensive part of his Pu'ako Green project to honor the 5-acre zoning. Well, you create 165-acre homes, you got a big infrastructure cost. So their goal was to shrink it down and make them 2-acre properties and have some big green belt where they could grow some stuff. They did have water. They had water in a well at the top of the property. So, my experience in all these things doesn't make me a know-it-all. It certainly does not, but it helps me have perspective for people who want to dream big, have big dreams. And the islands, of course, have a vibe to them that is like nowhere else. They are part of the United States. And so in that way, they're protected by the laws that we might know. But I'll tell you one thing, being a white guy in Hawaii wasn't always easy. It actually, this is funny, it took me 10 years to realize that the words frickin' howly was actually two words. Howly being a person without breath, and it can be used as a real derogatory term, one of hatred, one of resistance to the takeover of the Hawaiian nation, which some people would say happened back in 1893. Well, okay. I think the vibe here and the learning for me was I had an ambitious dream. I joined the service accordingly. And what I did is I ended up turning that dream into a dream with Sandra, into a dream about my life that was ready to move. It took me 2 years to get over my holding on, my grip on that 21 acres overlooking the ocean. And after enough centipede bites, mosquito bites, enough wild pig visits, enough fencing, enough stuff, and even a big lawsuit in our homeowners group over road costs. You want to suffer your life away? 7-year lawsuit about road costs that one neighbor had done. They'd put in all this money and then wanted to sue the rest of us to pay for it. And it was not cool. It finally got settled. Okay. But you know what? These are life experiences. You had your versions of them, I'm sure. I've had mine. It doesn't make me an expert, but it has me be a better counselor, a more skilled counselor to people who are going through the changes that come with life. And, you know, I don't claim to be an expert, but I claim to have some experience that I can share with good people to help make their life better every day. Make their life better every day. Now, of course, you're hearing me go through all this. I want to cover the party and I want to celebrate the beauty of this place. So I'm going to shift to that here in a moment. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this history. And I've given you the details. I made some notes here to cover these things because I have a purpose. Part of my star that I steer by is being kind and being proactive and being fair and being a trustable brother on the path for all of us. Okay, that's what I'm doing. And if you can dig it, let's talk more. I'm always available to spend this kind of deeper conversation with you, about your life, about my life. And it's a lot of fun. It's profound, it's real, and it's something we should do a whole bunch more of. I'm going to cease this recording and I'll continue with more about the party. Thanks so much.